A Weekend with Jason Dacey replay from Money FM 89.3.
Thanks for staying with us here on Money FM 89.3. I'm Jason Dacey. I'd like to welcome back a regular contributor here on Money FM, my good friend Nicholas Fung, the Managing Director at Black Dot Media Pte Limited, who of course is an experienced journalist, a former Straits Times correspondent. We're doing our international news week in review. Is it just me, Nick, or is it a really busy news year?
Well, we've been saying that every time I've come on. So I think this is just the way of the world. The world's getting more complicated, more complex. We have actors like Donald Trump making things interesting for us almost every single day. So, but yeah, this week has been a bit of a tour de force. We've been seeing things happening all around the world, in the US, in the Middle East, in Asia. So I think a lot to get through.
Well, you say, you know, about trying to get to the bottom of things. You know, it's not a clear picture. What exactly happened? Was it Iran who sank those two tankers in the Gulf of Oman? The US thinks it was. And we've, of course, got the energy minister of Saudi Arabia warning of a threat to energy supplies and market stability. Saudi Arabia wanting a rapid and decisive response to these recent attacks. Who do you believe here, Nick?
Well, I think it's going to take a little bit more time. And we've seen quite a few U.S. allies basically saying that they're not too sure as well and holding off on, you know, complete condemnation of Iran in this particular case. There is this one video which purportedly shows Iranian Revolutionary Guards. They use white boats for some of their naval operations. So there's a video of a white boat and some men removing what is supposedly an unexploded mine from one of the tankers. I believe it's owned by a Japanese company. Obviously, the video is grainy. It's taken from quite far away. President Trump thinks it's conclusive. But interestingly, the Japanese owner of that tanker clarified that they felt that they had been attacked by something from the air, like an aerial projectile or some kind of aerial vehicle or something flying. So that part kind of confuses the issue. Was it a mine that was placed on the side of the ship or was it a projectile from the air? I think a lot of lack of clarity, but more broadly, obviously, what's happening here is a response to Donald Trump's tactic of maximum pressure on Iran. You know, since he pulled out from the Iran nuclear deal.
Yeah, set up by President Obama, of course.
President Obama previously. He's then unilaterally reimposed sanctions on Iran and really seeking to tighten the screws. That seems to be his tactic. That's from his playbook in dealing with North Korea and many of the other kind of issues. So I think it's one of those things that is now sort of bearing fruit. The Iranians are responding to his tactics. Now, what that actually means in the longer run for a peaceful diplomatic solution, we're not too sure. In the past, we've seen, you know, some leaders, you know, playing the bad cop role, but it's usually a good cop. And in this case, it doesn't seem to be a good cop. There's no diplomatic channels. It really just seems, as Donald Trump would say, maximum pressure on all fronts. And there are observers getting very concerned that this is actually going to lead to armed military conflict in the Middle East. And that's something that nobody really wants to see.
If we're a devil's advocate here, we'd say that is the US victimizing Iran and really ganging up on Iran? Because their normal adversaries, the likes of Russia and North Korea, of course, have a different kind of role now. I know a lot of Iranians feel hard done by in this situation. And there's even before when there were other incidents, they were blamed without any evidence, right?
Oh, I think so. I think that, you know, even U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has been, you know, sort of reinforcing this line that there's been lots of evidence that Iran has been taking these tactics. And, you know, there are, of course, a school of thought that it's not entirely out of the realm of believability that Iran is responding to all this pressure being put on it by the U.S., but responding in a way that is still a little bit defiant. They're still looking to basically say that, you know, we're not going to be pushed around by the U.S. What this then eventually means, you know, is that I think President Trump is looking to force Iranian hands to give in to not just some of his demands, but all of his demands. He's now coming under a little bit of pressure himself because that tactic with North Korea hasn't really borne fruit. We've had, you know, two summits. We've had his position, which is complete denuclearization before we do anything. We haven't really seen much progress. It really, really begs the question whether trying to roll out the same tactic against Iran is actually going to bear fruit.
This is our International News Week in Review with Nicholas Fung, Managing Director at Black Dot Media here in Singapore. Now, of course, we've seen some shocking scenes over the last few days in Hong Kong, but the latest is that the Hong Kong government is suspending its controversial plan to allow extraditions to mainland China. It was according to Chief Executive Carrie Lam. She'd previously refused to scrap the bill despite those mass protests over different days last week by Hong Kong residents. Now, What do we read into this, Nick? Is this delaying tactics? Is this a change of heart? Because a lot of people, my wife's from Hong Kong, she's there at the moment. It's a massive issue for them, and this is a pivotal moment, really, in Hong Kong's post-handover history.
Oh, my mom's from Hong Kong as well, so I guess we all have some links to Hong Kong in this room, at least. And I think there is a lot of general concern over this particular law. If you've seen hundreds of thousands of protesters take to the street, reminiscent, again, of earlier protests that we've seen in the past few years, I think the fundamental and the building worry among a lot of young Hong Kongers especially is this increasing flexing, or at least the perceived or felt imposition of Chinese authority and rule within the SAR, the Special Administrative Region. Of course, the agreement was for Hong Kong to have a more liberal system for at least 50 years after the handover back to China in 1997 from the British. And I think that some people are feeling that it's not going to last 50 years. They're starting to feel more of a Chinese way of doing things, way of governance as well. So I think if you saw Carrie Lam's speech, there was a genuine sense of contrition, and she seemed genuinely concerned that this was a situation that was not tenable and was not good for her people or for Hong Kong. But she did stop short of apologizing. She did stop short of saying that the bill is completely off the table. And she did not sort of, you know, appease the protesters by sort of recognizing the harsh tactics, at least that's how they perceive it, that was imposed by taken on by the police. So from what I understand, there still is another protest scheduled for 2:30 Singapore Hong Kong time today, Sunday. And at the same time, they are saying that they will carry on protesting until the bill is completely taken off the table, failing to recognize that this is actually a big step back by the Hong Kong government. In the past, Chief Executive Carrie Lam herself has said that she's going to push this law through. Just 24 hours later, she's basically said it's suspended indefinitely. So there are some who are saying that, oh, it's just a delaying tactic, it's just a temporary postponement, but it is an indefinite suspension, and she said that they are in no hurry to revisit it, and they actually want to do more consultation and more discussion with the people, or at least explaining, communicating what the law is actually about. So I see it as a bit of a step back for Hong Kong. It's not something they've done before. Whether that's going to be enough, well, at least as far as today is concerned, I think we're still going to see some protests.
Well, let's change countries within Asia with Nicholas Fung in our International News Week in Review. And this is a story we're looking at the Straits Times. Tensions rising between Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad and his likely heir, Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim. After that sex scandal, of course, Economics Affairs Minister Azmin Ali, there was a video that some people say it was him with another man. He's denied that. But it does have hallmarks to some things that have happened before, of course, with Anwar in the past. What an incredible week it was in Malaysia with this salacious video. And the other man in the video, Nick, saying, "Well, yeah, that was me." And the minister himself saying, "No, that wasn't me." Who do you believe?
Wow, it's I think, as you mentioned, I think many of us who watch geopolitics and regional affairs in this region would say there's definitely a sense of deja vu. I think some commentators, even in Malaysia, are saying, you know, the more things change, the more they seem to stay the same.
Yeah.
And it definitely has the hallmarks of some of the tactics used in the past, at least smear political opponents. You know, obviously in Malaysia, allegations of homosexuality and improper affairs are quite damning, you know, within their culture and within their system. So it's obviously an easy tactic to go after somebody. I think what we're seeing now is the complexity of relationships between the incumbent prime minister, the ostensible heir apparent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we heard just a few days before this scandal broke, the appointment of the new head of the Anti-Corruption Commission by Prime Minister Dr. Mahathir, of somebody who is quite an Anwar opposer, you know, somebody who's quite against Anwar. So that already started to sort of raise questions about a rift between Dr. Mahathir and his declared heir, Anwar.
And the appointment really kind of came out of the blue, didn't it?
Came out of the blue. It was quite forceful. There was no discussion. Mm. And Dr. Mahathir said, this is it, you know, no changes. So that kind of raised some questions. And now this sort of affair that's come out with the video is really raising a lot of questions in and around the stability within the current government. The Economics Affairs Minister is viewed by some as a rising star.
Yep.
And and potentially something that some people might become jealous about. And so we see this sort of video tactic being employed as well. I think what complicates the issue now, obviously, is some notion of fake news, because I think Dr. Mahathir was quite fast to say, no, this video is potentially fake. It could be a deep fake. You know, you can't really tell who it is. But I think the general confusion with the aide or the other person who was involved in the video, at first coming out to deny it, and then subsequently coming out to deny the denial, and then sort of admitting that he was coerced to deny it. It is such a convoluted story, and I think that it's going to have many, many more twists and turns. But speaking from a perspective in Singapore, obviously we don't wish ill on any of our neighbours, and certainly it'll be great to be able to see a more stable and upward progression for Malaysia as well. And these kind of issues just basically sidetrack and distract people from the key issues at hand, the economy and how to ensure that growth continues in the country.
So International News Week in Review with Nicholas Fung from Black Dot Media. We're looking now at something that I think all Malaysians agree on, whether it's Anwar or PM Mahathir. That's Lee Chong Wei and what he did for Malaysia, the champion badminton player, announcing his retirement during the week. And, you know, we look back on his career, and I know Singaporeans and Europe keen sportsmen, we have to admire what he achieved. But he was a little bit of a nearly man, wasn't he? Because he never won that Olympic gold and that world championship.
Three-time Olympic silver medalist, and I think he is certainly a character, besides being an underdog, you know, he's certainly a character that everybody continuously root for.
Yes.
Very humble, very polite, very respectful. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he had this intense rivalry with Lin Dan, the bad boy of badminton.
We love that. And what a contrast they were. You know, Lin Dan with the tattoos, and he's a left-hander, and he's kind of looks like a rock star. And you've got this kind of, I don't know whether geeky is the right word, but he doesn't look like a macho athlete, but he's an incredible fighter.
Humble guy next door, you know, super nice guy. I've never had a chance to meet him, but obviously taking part in the SEA Games, we've seen him around as well. And just to have that consistency of a career up against an opponent like Lin Tan, you know, super dominant, but able to give us some really, really memorable battles. And then, of course, having this tragic illness that he's still battling with today.
Yes, of course, yeah. And
when he announced his retirement, you know, he apologized. He said, I'm really sorry. Mm. You know, and everybody, outpouring of commentaries and views and opinions, saying that there's nothing to be sorry about. You know, you've done your country proud and you've done the sport full credit. And I think all of us in Asia have really, really enjoyed following his career. And of course, yesterday we had the really good news that he's going to be the chef de mission for the Malaysian contingent for the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. Now, that is fantastic, because it's wonderful to be able to see the transition of athletes into senior statesmen and then to become almost like a mentor to the next generation of athletes. And I think he embodies so much that is good about sport in terms of the respect, fair play, honour, you know, battling, fighting hard to overcome adversity. He really is an iconic sportsman, and he's going to be great for Malaysian sports, and hopefully as a standard bearer for sports in Southeast Asia and Asia, he continues to shine the light and be an icon for many young athletes to come.
We will feel the loss of a champion. That was the words of Dr. Mahathir after the 36-year-old announced his retirement. Of course, we can see him, as you mentioned, Nick, coming up in the Tokyo Olympics. This has been our International News Week in Review.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.